Blog Talk Radio.
Ron Edwards, they're having some technical difficulties. I assume that we're getting them straightened out. It's really difficult to tell. If you're listening out there, we'll hopefully be able to bring forward the information, which will keep you enlightened, if you will. Let us check and see if we are being heard. Anywhere in the United States, here in the state of Minnesota, technical problems, probably the outgrowth of our friends at the NSA.
Thank you. Keep listening.
All right, then. We've got our signal back, if you will. A lot of things going on. Probably NSA knew we were probably going to talk a little bit about the events in France and in Europe. We're definitely going to talk about that. Because we lost about 8-9 minutes of our international flavor. We will let you know in advance. We're going to be talking in the last half hour of tonight's program about some of the local events that are going on. And there are some heavy stuff that is happening, lawsuits, if you will, people suing the chief of police, if you will, rumors about some rather interesting inquiries being made of local authorities. We have a Ferguson-type situation coming out of St. Paul. For those of you on the domestic and international scene, a young African-American shot early this morning, Sunday morning in the city of St. Paul, which is our sister city. Police maintain that now they're maintaining he was in a car and drove towards them in a speeding car, and they opened fire. Originally, earlier this morning, they said he was on foot. He was texting, and that as the police arrived and got out of their car, he charged them opening fire. But the story's changed and gone around. The NAACP of St. Paul is calling for a federal... Well, they didn't say federal. They said they were calling for an outside-the-state investigator, which is just absolutely ridiculous. That's just not going to happen. But anyways, turning to the news that has captured the attention of some Americans, the problems in France. But actually, these are problems that are everywhere in Europe and certainly the Middle East, if you will. 17 people killed in actually, four separate incidents. The offices of the magazine Charlie, who put out, what was it today, 5 million copies. Their normal circulation is 60,000. They put out 5 million copies today that were swooped up within, a couple of hours. That's a heck of a payday for Charlie, if you will. That's the French name of the magazine. A satire magazine that has made a lot of fun of a lot of different individuals, religions, and et cetera. And clearly there has been consequences. But it was the attack on their offices in Paris that I think shocked the world, if you will, and raised serious questions about what is really going on with regards to the problems between Christendom and Islam, which no one really wants to talk about, doesn't want to step on anyone's fingers, if you will. But it is quite clear that there are serious problems. One of the things that worries us as a black commentator is that in the same week that we had 17 individuals killed in Paris, 2,000 black Nigerians were massacred by terrorist groups in northern Nigeria. 2,000 black Nigerians, primarily women and children. In fact, an entire city has been laid siege to, if you will. And these killings have been going on for quite some time. When I say quite some time, I'm talking about over a period of about maybe a week, 5 days. And yet, no one in the West spoke out, talked in terms of their concerns, and so it goes back to raising the question about black life is meaningful, black life is important, black life is treasured, precious, and et cetera. Think about that, my friends, and listening to tonight's program. 2,000 black Nigerians slaughtered, murdered in northern Nigeria. No one had anything to say. Then the situation takes place in Paris. You have four terrorists, according to what they say, three of whom are dead. The fourth, a young woman who initially CNN and others were identifying as being in the kosher market, and actually said that she the previous day had taken part in the shooting death of a French policewoman outside of a Jewish school in central Paris, if you will. To the embarrassment of the American and French media, it was found out that the young lady in question had left France by way of Madrid to Istanbul and then went overland, obviously by car, to the Turkish-Syrian border and is now being identified as being under the protection of ISIS. ISIS has declared her and her three companions martyrs, if you will. The three men died in a blaze of gunfire, two at a machine shop in a small town just north of Paris, and the third individual, Colbet, who has really turned out to be a man that caught everybody off guard, dies in a hail of gunfire, exchanging gunfire with French security forces inside of the kosher shop, or market as they refer to it. Anti-Semitism on the rise in some parts of France, if you will. The Islamic jihadist organizations indicating that this is a great day for Islam, if you will, and are raising the question once again of the conflict going on, as we said earlier, between Christendom, if you will, and the Islamic world on the other hand. The United States wanting all of us to, quote-unquote, be concerned and outraged by what has happened. In black America, folks are outraged. They're outraged as it pertains to both sides of the aisle, if you will, be it 17 citizens killed in and around Paris, or 2,000, actually more than 2,000, because there were also two suicide bombings in two small Nigerian towns, and in one, a most tragic situation, which, by the way, no one had really spoken to, in which a 10-year-old black Nigerian child, girl, if you will, was used as a suicide bomber. Explosives were strapped to her. She was going into a market, one of those situations of a market there in a small city in the northwestern part of Nigeria, and whoever was controlling the explosives and the detonation detonated the pack that she was carrying, the vest that she was probably wearing, 20, and of course blowing the 10-year-old child to pieces. But we've not heard the kind of expression of concern and outrage about anybody using a 10-year-old child. But then we didn't talk much in this country after a 12-year-old African-American youngster was shot and left to die on the ground in Cleveland, Ohio. In fact, we want to make sure that we point out the video that has been revealed. Again, that video was suppressed in some regards 7-8 days ago because of the events in Paris. But the video shows the young African-American 12-year-old being laying on the ground unattended. In fact, it was an FBI agent who, for whatever reason, was in the vicinity, a white FBI agent, who actually attempted to give the 12-year-old African-American child first aid, if you will, trying to retain his life. His 14-year-old sister, who had been across the street in their home, again, across the street, was beaten and knocked to the ground, handcuffed, thrown in the back of the squad car. The mother was treated very badly when she rushed out of her home, again, right across the street. But many of those factors were suppressed, pushed off the pages, off the TV screens, and et cetera, because of our concern, or at least the perception of concern within all aspects of America with regards to what had happened in four incidents in Paris, France. It appears that we also are losing a significant amount of momentum with regards to the issues that came out of Ferguson, that came out of New York City, that came out of Cleveland, and came out of other places around the United States. It seems that the black agenda is being hijacked again, if you will, and that is most regrettable. That is most unfortunate. By the way, we will be back taking phone calls the first Wednesday in February. Our co-host, Mr. Don Allen, will be returning from a academic sabbatical, if you will, getting his academic credentials in order, if you will, and so we will be back accepting, receiving phone calls from our listening audience. But at this point, the political decision has been made that there are a number of issues that need to be put out for reflection and for review, coming both locally and internationally and domestically, if you will. And so that's the way that the situation can be handled. Now, there are some who have the phone number for our in-studio phone, if you will. We've given that periodically. We know, of course, the phone is significantly being monitored, if you will, by NSA. We had expected a possibility of a call from Europe, if you will, but have decided that that would maybe not be appropriate at this particular hour, given the roundups and surveillance that has started in the United States. Oh, yes. There are things happening here in the United States as it pertains to the events in France that are not being talked about. In fact, we are located in one of the hotbeds of quote-unquote scrutiny, if you will, and monitoring of Islamic and Muslim activity here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. In fact, our Somali population, our Ethiopian population, our Nigerian and West African populations, and et cetera, are under close scrutiny. Different lists are being looked at, not only no-fly lists, but lists that talk in terms of travel, where a person has been traveling, who a person met with, who they talked to, if you will, correspondence, mail, text mail, and et cetera, all being looked at, heavy teams of FBI and Homeland Security agents have been on the move here in the Twin Cities for the last 4 or 5 days, if you will. Those are things, though, that we are, as journalists, are basically told not to talk about, though we disregard that. But we find it interesting the kind of restrictive reporting that has been going on here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul over the last 4 days with regards to the heavy surveillance, quote-unquote, of people with Islamic contacts who are part of the Islamic Muslim religion, if you will, and people who have been identified in their comings and goings, even here in the Twin Cities, as persons of interest, if you will. And when you obtain the status of person of interest, it means that you are under surveillance, if you will. A federal grand jury has been looking at this problem for quite some time. Again, folks don't want to talk about that. In fact, we're basically served up information that indicates that the county attorney, the U.S. attorney, and the sheriff for Hennepin County, the county attorney for Hennepin County, and, of course, the U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, have been working closely with imams and other leaders, particularly within the Somali and, by extension, Muslim community. One hopes that when these kinds of relationships are at play, that there is a full discussion and understanding as it pertains to what both sides, quote-unquote, are equally, notice the word we used, equally providing and giving to the relationship. One of the things that has been talked about is some of the money that has been allocated from the Department of Justice, from the federal government's Homeland Security, and et cetera, is a monitoring program. It basically is identified to those that are expected not to know better. No, I just noticed I didn't say expected to know better, but expected not to know better, is that these are relationship building, block building, as they like to call, helping young people of the Muslim experience and persuasion to understand how great and good things are here in the United States. And they need to certainly share what it is that they may know, they may have overheard, be it at the coffee shops or in the mosque, if you will, or in those private meetings that they have in cafes and et cetera, in particularly here in Minneapolis, if you will, though there is Islamic activity in the city of St. Paul and also in Rochester. Now, by the way, for those that tend to want to forget, we have had a small number of Somalis and Muslims who have been arrested, charged, and tried for actions against the national security of the United States. In fact, we had a couple of Somali women 2 years ago who quietly were sentenced to, 10 years in the federal penitentiary for aiding and providing comfort, if you will, and assets and resources to organizations that are considered to be a part of, quote-unquote, the Islamic danger groups that are on the enemy's list. Oh, people tend not to want to talk in our country about the fact that we have an enemy's list here in the United States. The government maintains an enemy's list, if you will. Do not be fooled about the fact that the United States is above creating and working off of enemies list. People are identified as enemies of the state. In fact, one of the things that's happened in the last 4 days here in the Twin Cities, for those of you that are out there and are texting your friends now saying, look, you need to turn to this particular program because this guy is saying some stuff that we didn't know or we don't want to get out. There has been a significant increase with regards to the gender issue, and that is inquiries have intensified with regards to how many young women are being recruited and how many Al-Qaeda and ISIS recruiters are, quote, or quietly, if you will, floating through and providing information, disseminating information, helping to develop thoughts, if you will, ideas, if you will, and helping to aid and abet, quote unquote, the great holy war that is, it commenced many, many years ago. In fact, some say it commenced, a couple centuries ago, in which they are probably absolutely right. Because this is Martin Luther King month here in the United States, and that means there are a lot of discussions and reflections on historical events, many of which are not revealed as they should be because we don't have any historical institutions that are, quote-unquote, totally and absolutely committed to the African-American historical experience. It means that some questions that some young Muslims asked as it pertains to the struggles of the sons and daughters of the African, their ancestors, as well as, quote-unquote, the ancestors of those of us who are 8th, 9th, 10th, 12th generation, quote-unquote, Americans. Because of the absence of information, documentation, and history, many young Muslims are oftentimes confused about what the heck has happened. In fact, they have many do not have a clear indication of the struggles, the battles that were fought, the kind of decadence, if you will, that was deployed against the African-American populations in this country going back to, quote-unquote, before 1700. That is unfortunate because that, now going back as we kind of wrap up the situation in France as we move to the first half hour of tonight's program, the whole issue of how the inquiries of young Muslims in France, Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, definitely Great Britain, Spain, Italy, where there are heavy, quote-unquote, Muslim and particularly North African populations, immigrants, if you will. Now, many of the questions relevant to how those countries, particularly some of those countries that were past colonial powers, some still are colonial masters. Great Britain is still a colonial master. France is still a colonial master, if you will. But Spain and Portugal were great colonial masters. The Dutch were tremendous colonial masters, if you will. The Belgium, some of the most, quote-unquote, repressive colonial masters, if you will, and et cetera. Only basically the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Denmark stayed away from, quote-unquote, the colonial master mentality. In fact, at one point, people tend to forget that the Germans, if you will, in the days of the Kaiser, had their black possessions in black Africa, if you will, and were rather ruthless on how they Iran their territories, if you will, which were taken from them after the end of the First World War as a part of the different conferences that were had, the conference of Vienna as an example, where Europe really dismantled Black Africa, if you will, setting boundaries and et cetera that did nothing but guarantee conflict. And of course, the philosophy of the colonial powers back in that day, those days, was that we are needed to help the little ignorant Black savages maintain some semblance of order and civilization. Of course, one tends to forget that the little ignorant Black savages had great institutions, great cities, great empires, and et cetera, while many in quote-unquote Europe were still trying to figure out on how to fry or cook a piece of meat, if you will. But all of that has, in many regards, been lost, and yet this is a part of what is now, right now, as we speak, under discussion in France, that as the word that everyone likes to utilize now is radicalized, if you will. I have to tell you, as one who was involved in the civil rights activities and et cetera in this country, we were, as young Negroes, African Americans, and et cetera, accused of being radicalized, if you will, accused of being too much involved in quote-unquote radical kinds of concepts and ideas. You know, Black folks were not supposed to read France Fanon and et cetera and get a better feeling on what it was really, quote-unquote, all about. But anyways, as we said earlier, many of these young Muslim minds are going to great lengths. And there has been a lot of suppression, oppression, and racism in France, if you will, as there's been in Germany, as there's been in the Netherlands, and particularly in Belgium, and definitely in Britain, and et cetera. Basically, it is never reflected upon until there is some crisis, if you will, some tragedy, such as what happened at a magazine, if you will, and the death of individuals who said they were merely cartoonists, if you will, or some other particular situation, such as at a kosher market where people were merely there to buy food for the holidays. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, we were coming up on the Jewish version of Christmas and Hanukkah and whatever other definitions that they are. By the way, we made reference, this is for some of the young African Americans that say that they are interested in having a better understanding of how the world was reshaped after the First World War. We refer you to a book called Paris, 1919. It is a book that talks about 6 months that changed the world. We're not going to go into it in great depth. We may deal with some aspects of it next week on this program, but it is a book that helps one get a better understanding on how the white colonial masters, if you will, of Europe, and of course with the assistance of their friends and buddies. This was interesting too, no one likes to talk about it. There was one nation of color that was a part of the discussions, and that was the Japanese, who initially Europe thought that they could, quote-unquote, play them in such a way as to, quote-unquote, make them their new version of the new Negro, if you will, the new Black. There is a specific piece of information in this book, Paris, by Margaret Macmillan, Macmillan. She did quite a bit of research. We would call your attention or suggest that you take a look at the recommendations that the Supreme Powers made, and this is the reason they really brought the Japanese in, because just a couple years before the conflict of 1914, the Japanese had brought Tsarist Russia to their knees in a tremendous war fought in the so-called Far East. And so the thinking was that the Japanese military machine imperial military machine would be a significant piece of dealing with the reshaping of the Far East, particularly China and the Pacific. In fact, it's ironic that our President Barack Obama is talking about some of the same things that were talked about at the Paris Peace Conference back in 1919. And then there is this very interesting map and features, if you will, narrative, on the quote-unquote dismantling of Black Africa, if you will. And with the exception of the so-called Union of South Africa and some territory called Southwest Africa, which was under the control and was to be credited, if you will, to the Portuguese, the decisions that were made, this takes us back to a comment just minutes ago that it was a very clever philosophy and doctrine that came out of, and they had been working on this for quite some time, the conference, the peace conference. It's always about peace, isn't it? According to these people, the Peace Conference of Paris of 1919, where they actually talked in terms of the need to help the little ignorant black, quote-unquote, savages and children of Africa and the little yellow dummies and, quote-unquote, of Asia and et cetera, though sometimes they had to be careful on how they said that in front of the Japanese. The Japanese had been an independent and unconquered country for many, many, many years. In fact, a number of centuries, if you will. Also in the book is the discussion about what later became the Palestinian or Palestine problem, if you will. That is interesting as it pertains to the conference of 1919 in Paris. You know, sometimes ghosts come back to get you, if you know what I mean, when you talk about the problem that the French are going through right now, that the Dutch, the Belgians, the British, the Spanish, the Italians to some degree, and et cetera, the Germans. It was all of their making. They had an opportunity to do it the right way. And for those of you that are literate, if you will, and readers and et cetera, we would suggest the book by Margaret Macmillan, Paris, 1919. 6 months that changed the world. And God knows it certainly did change the world in many respects for the worst, if you will. Well, we want to move to some local stuff here in our beloved Minneapolis and St. Paul, if you will. Another Ferguson-type situation has emerged here, as we said early this Wednesday morning, about 2:30 in the city of St. Paul, which is our sister city. A young African-American was identified by a caller as a terrorist, if you will. Ah, there that word is, that he was making terroristic threats and et cetera, texting messages to, apparently to a former girlfriend or a current girlfriend, one they haven't gotten that story quite together. It happened along, the 200 block of University. Police arrived, as we said at the top of this program initially. The police said the African-American gunman was on foot with his weapon, if you will. Oh, they knew that he had a weapon because as they were getting the call in about him texting somewhere or another, they were able to remember that he was an individual who had previously been identified as a person who carried a gun. So as the police swooped into the parking lot of the apartment complex there, they were already prepared that this young African-American was armed. Initially, early this morning, around 5, 6 this morning, newscasters were saying that there had been an exchange of gunfire, if you will. That story has apparently ebbed and changed a little bit. We imagine there will be a different version, maybe even on our Channel 9 Fox network here in the Twin Cities, which has just come on, if you will. Certainly by 10, as our major network stations do the local news, they'll have a better adaptation, if you will. But it appears now, according to a spokesperson for the St. Paul Police, that, and by the way, the chief of the St. Paul Police is a African-American, if you will, that the individual in question actually was using his car to drive towards the police, if you will. So that story hasn't been totally tightened up, if you will, but certainly we'll get it right now. In the meanwhile, it was interesting, in a suburb just north called Cottage Grove, just north of St. Paul, there was a 13-hour standoff with a Caucasian gunman whose father had called and said that his young son was acting crazy, and there was a 13-hour standoff, and ultimately SWAT teams from Washington County and other jurisdictions entered the home there in Cottage Grove, and uneventfully took into custody the young Caucasian. There was no need to shoot up the house, shoot him up, or that kind of thing. So we have different kinds of things. Anyways, within a couple of hours after the death of the young African-American, his name has not been officially released. That's the reason we're not stating a name at this particular point. Leadership from St. Paul, led by Jeffrey Martin, the president of the NAACP of St. Paul. Mr. Martin is a assistant city attorney for the city of St. Paul, if you will. You know, all these big jurisdictions and municipalities have their own city attorney's offices and et cetera. Mr. Martin and many of his NAACP colleagues at a press conference indicated that they were calling for an immediate investigation. And according to the media, indicated that they wanted an investigator from outside of the state of Minnesota. That's not going to happen. Of course, what is happening is that the NAACP, no matter where they are, be they in St. Paul or I think we still have an NAACP branch in Minneapolis, though they were supposed to have an election about a month ago, didn't have it back, but what the heck. You know, participatory democracy, it's a thing of the past. But anyways, the NAACP of St. Paul here has indicated that they wanted an outside investigator. They won't get that. They said they also wanted a change on how the St. Paul Police Civilian Review Board deals with, quote-unquote, investigating the conduct of officers, if you will. That's probably a damn good idea. All of that was being suggested in St. Louis and other places, and it's been introduced and discussed here in the Twin Cities for a while, probably the last 50 years. You know what I'm saying? And so at some point, I'm quite sure that the system will be listening to us, if you will. Tomorrow morning's editions of the St. Paul Pioneer Press Dispatch, which is the prime paper in St. Paul, the second largest in the state of Minnesota after the Minneapolis Star Tribune. St. Paul Dispatch will be giving the necessary version of what happened, if you will, and what the black leaders said that they expected and they wanted. This will probably keep the attention of the African-American populations, actually in both cities, if you will, because there was a shooting almost 2 years ago of a young African-American in a basement in the south side of Minneapolis, in which allegedly this young African-American actually took away the submachine gun of an officer who was a part of a special SWAT unit of 8 white officers who cornered him in a basement. He actually, according to them, took the officer's gun away and opened fire and shot 2 officers in the legs, and then his head was blown off, if you will. But anyways, that was a grand jury here in Hennepin County, which is Minneapolis, declined to indict. Boy, why are we surprised by that? And now there's some kind of civil suit. An attorney by the name of Patton is indicating that some things will be happening. He filed on behalf of the family a civil suit in September, if it was. And so there should be some date set for some trial. In fact, he said to some within the community that there'll probably be a trial date set for November of this year, if you will. So, you know, get ready for allegedly for that. But with the latest death of a young African-American on the streets of the city of St. Paul, this was a city, by the way, that received some national prominence after videos showed up of a young African American being tasered in the Skyway system here in downtown, or there in downtown St. Paul last, what was it, February or something like that? Yeah. And so we have these situations, these sensational activities that take place, and everybody gets all pumped up. The leaders put on their best suits and most expensive shoes and step front and center, if you will. I want to be fair, because we've been doing that for a long time, if you will. I was a part of organizations that used to do that, except we would get some results, if you will, in regards to that, but that's a discussion for another time, if you will. In the meanwhile, announcement, tomorrow morning's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune has a former deputy chief, black former deputy chief, Edward Frizzell, is filed in the federal court this afternoon, this morning, a lawsuit against the chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, Janae Harteau, and the city of Minneapolis for demoting him, if you will, though that's not quite an accurate description. I think testimony, if it ever comes forward in this, will indicate that the department was getting ready to demote Ed Frizzell prior to him, get this now, prior to him filing to run against the now three-term sheriff, Richard Stanek, very popular sheriff here. I think Sheriff Stanek mastered 77% of the vote in the election in November, if you will. Mr. Frizzell indicates that it was a case of race, if you will. I don't think that's going to work with the federal magistrate who will review it and then decide to send it up to the federal judge. Reason is that the two individuals who replaced Mr. Frizzell, Lieutenant Frizzell, now in the positions in which he was removed from, are also African Americans, if you will. First, Deputy Chief Frizzell was demoted to commander, handling the kind of the administrative piece of the administration, if you will. He actually declined that. He says he was demoted again because he spoke to the Minneapolis Star Tribune. That is not what the city of Minneapolis is going to say, and they're going to offer proof, according to reliable sources that indicate that he turned down the position that then later went to another African-American, if you will, Commander Gerald Moore, a 31-year veteran. In fact, now the most senior black officer in the Minneapolis Police Department, well respected, well liked, if you will. And so Lieutenant Frizzell was given a very small command of about, beside himself, there are two other investigators in the office. You know, sometimes you reap what you sow. But it sounds good. It'll be a discussion piece for the movers and shakers, I'm quite sure, who will step up to the plate and talk in terms of diversity and et cetera in the Minneapolis Police Department, just as they're going to be talking about it as it pertains to the St. Paul Police Department. It's not like we have enormous numbers here as it pertains to black law enforcement. The city of Minneapolis has about 68 or 69 African-American officers. They have a small number who are now in training in both the cadet programs, the CSO programs, and et cetera, maybe four, if you will, one female. St. Paul has about 41 African-American police officers. They were able to get one African-American through the academy in just the last couple of weeks. It's, again, something that our leaders have said to us in the Fourth Estate, that we should not be talking about those kinds of things, that that is negative, if you will, and it comes at a time when certainly they are attempting to retrieve, you know, significant dollars to do their thing, if you will, and continue to bring profit and harmony to the African-American community economically. Though every time the statistics, my friends, on the national and international scene, every time the statistics come out about, you know, employment, education, et cetera, we African Americans are always at the bottom of the totem pole. We are the least educated, the least employed, if you will, the most incarcerated. That's one thing. We have significant dominance, if you will, over going to jail, going to the penitentiary. But our economic portfolio is not, quote-unquote, very good. But our leaders keep saying each time they receive significant handouts, you know, $750,000 here, $1 million here, $200,000, $300,000 here, et cetera, that things are going to improve. The only problem is I've been listening to that same story for 20 years as a change took place with respect to leadership within the black community. Again, something that we're not supposed to talk about as we go into the last 9 minutes of tonight's program, that we need to be cautious, if you will. We need to be reserved in how it is that we talk about the modus operandi of the leadership of our respective community, both Minneapolis and St. Paul. St. Paul has a situation that is similar to Minneapolis, and that is this past election, St. Paul lost the only seat on their city council. Now, their city council is comprised of 7 city council representatives. In Minneapolis, it's 13. But for the first time in St. Paul in 30 years, there is no African American sitting on the St. Paul City Council. There is a very able African-American female who is representing a heavy concentrated district, black district, in the Minnesota legislature. In fact, she's the only African-American in the House, if you will. And, of course, in Minneapolis, and boy, we really don't talk about this, for the first time in 30-some years, we have no African-Americans on the Minneapolis City Council. In fact, in 1989, we had 2 African Americans on the Minneapolis City Council of the 13 council members. And within a year, we had a African American mayor, if you will. And she lasted 2 terms. And then some of the African American leaders, you know, turned on her, stabbed her in the back. And we lost that seat. We will never see another African American mayor in the history of this city. But in the meanwhile, we have no representation on the city council. Now, last night at the school board, for those of you that are school board, quote-unquote, groupies, if you will, some new members were sworn in, and one was a former African-American city council member who made the mistake and tried to run against a white woman for the county commissioner board, if you will, very powerful position in this county, if you will. And he had to give up his seat to run against her. She crushed him. In fact, he didn't even get out of the endorsement convention. But last night, they say he was in rare form. That's the beloved, we call him Jamaican Dandy, if you will. And that is the now school board member, former 3rd and then 5th Ward Councilman Don Samuels, if you will. They said he gave a great dissertation and reflection, made much reference to Hamlet and Shakespeare, and I don't know if he could remember any black intellectual scholars, but anyways, it was quite the meeting, if you will. This is a funny thing too about our city. 67% of the little children that go to school in the Minneapolis Public School District are children of color. But within that group, about 80% are African Americans, you know, native born, if you will. But we just have a problem voting in a African American as chair of the Board of Education, if you will. We've had a variety of other kinds of folks, but I noticed in the last 15 years or so, it's just pretty difficult to put together the juggernaut within the Democratic regime, because we are a Democratic city, though we do have a battle going on here, and I know some would be unhappy if I didn't mention this, where we have the reformers and the traditionalists. The traditionalists are those that, you know, maintain that we continue to further advance and matriculate education based on the old 3 R's, if you will, with certainly modifications. The reformers are of the mindset that we maybe return to the days of old England where, if if your parents didn't have money, maybe you wouldn't go to school to really be educated. Maybe you'd go to be trained, if you will, which would make it almost impossible for you to be successful in a very competitive world where we're talking about the cyber world, cybercast, you know what I mean, cyber future, and et cetera. And so in some regards tonight here in the Twin Cities as we enter 2015, we see many of the same old problems, but I have to say that one of the things that the white community does here is that they will throw bad money after bad money. And no one likes to talk about, let's say, let's give it a 20-year period, how much money has been poured into the African-American leadership groups and et cetera, and then take a look at what we've gotten for our buck, if you will. Now, we're not supposed to talk about that. That's not something that has been authorized, if you will. So we keep all these things in mind as we move over the last 4 minutes of tonight's program. By the way, for the sports junkies, if you will, the Plantation Bowl played the other night, played Monday night, if you will, at Jerry Jones' Taj Mahal there in Arlington, Texas, if you will. I mean, really, it is the, you know, it is the Plantation Bowl. The young African-Americans, about 67%, 68% of the players that were suited up and on, well, not necessarily not all played, but who were suited up and et cetera, African-Americans, if you will, of the 44 starters on offense and defense, yeah, it's 22 to each side. Particularly in the case of Ohio State, probably 80% of Ohio State starters black, probably 70% of the Oregon Ducks black, if you will. So that meant that there was a significant number of young athletes, and I'll also give deference to the white athletes, though they'll get their degrees. Three-fourths of the blacks on both squads will not receive their degrees, if you will. But more importantly, these young men who cannot be compensated, if you will, because this is allegedly an amateur sport, though their coaches were making $4 or $5 million. In fact, Urban Meyer, my good friend Urban Meyer, is being paid $4 million to coach Ohio State. His counterpart in Oregon is being paid about $1.4 million. He's already negotiating a significant extension. There were a nice bonus. We understand the bonus for Urban Meyer is $2.5 million. The bonus for Oregon's coach, $1.5 million, if you will. And that does not even account the endorsements. Everything was, quote unquote, basically Snow White, if you will. Even the officiating crew from the Big 12 had one African American. He was the side judge, if you will. So you saw him all the time because he's the official that always comes in from the side and marks the ball, puts the ball in play. So for many of you who weren't paying any attention, you thought there were a lot of black officials. There weren't. But broadcasting crews, I mean, really, the network should be whipped, if you will, like a slave. I looked at Heather Cox. She had a beautiful new hairdo for that red hair and et cetera. They couldn't find any sisters to interview the black ball players, if you will. All the commentators were white, with the exception of one traditional token African-American at the halftime group, if you will, in the booth discussing what was happening and what was being obtained and helping to promote. And we understand that the figure is now $600 million, $600 million paid out and et cetera overall for the game. The two institutions, we understand, will be taking home officially about $20 million apiece, if you will. And as we said, there are bonuses and et cetera for the athletic staff. And my God, the head coaches, I mean, just think of the head coaches taking their time to work with these young amateur athletes and, you know, be compensated to the tune of $3, $4, or $5 million. I mean, what the hell? That's a nice day's work. But anyways, again, not supposed to talk about those kinds of things. We're not supposed to get into things that deal with the plantation mentality, the continued implementation of the doctrine of the slave and the plantation, if you will. And so we won't do that, if you will. We'll leave that to others who are most suitable, if you will, in the tradition of Dango or Django or whoever else to dance around, shuffle around, smile, buck and wing, and talk in terms of how great things are in America. But let me say this in closing. For those young people, for you young people out there who really caught the attention of this nation after Ferguson and et cetera, your movement is being hijacked. And hopefully you're having discussions amongst yourselves what you're going to be able to do. Don't make the mistake that we made coming out of the 1960s to allow that to happen, be it the Vietnam War or quote-unquote women's rights, if you will. Anyways, on behalf of our team, if you will, we wish you a fond bon voyage, and we'll be back next Wednesday. Thank you.